it. Lita's eyes darted to Cynthia. Sorry, I don't think we've met. I'm Lita Cole. Cynthia, right? She asked, holding out a hand. Cynthia didn't take it. How did Lita even know who Cynthia was? He must have mentioned her, Watt thought, or else Lita had been trolling through his page on the feeds. He found the notion strangely pleasing. Hi, Lita, Cynthia said, without moving forward. It was clear from her tone what she thought of the other girl. After a moment, Lita lowered her outstretched hand and turned to Watt. Watt, let's go, she commanded and started off, clearly assuming he would follow. Watt looked back at Cynthia. Sorry, I have to... Whatever the queen bitch summons, Cynthia said tartly, too low for Lita to overhear. Go ahead. Watt didn't hesitate. Cynthia would forgive him later, but Lita never would. He hurried to catch up with her. You didn't need to make that scene, he said, though for some reason he'd found it a little entertaining. Maybe he was getting too accustomed to being with Lita Cole. Sorry if I made things difficult with your girlfriend, Lita said briskly. I've told you before she's not my girlfriend. I've told you before I don't care. She didn't even glance his way as she turned onto his street. Watt was a little surprised that she wanted to go to his place tonight, and even more surprised that she knew her way around down here. Look, if you wanted me to come over, you could have just messaged me, he said, his mind already racing ahead to what his parents would say when they walked in together. Though they'd met Lita before, they thought she was a classmate, after all. Lita laughed. I'm not here for that, she said. And he loved the way she said that, as if she wanted to be dismissive of the notion but couldn't quite manage it. There's someone I need you to look into, Lita went on. I keep meaning to ask you about her, but, you know. She broke off awkwardly. But I keep distracting you. He grinned at her discomposure. Don't flatter yourself. They stepped up to his front door. Watt hesitated and glanced over at Lita. Could you just tell my parents that you're here for a school project and... Relax, Watt. This isn't my first rodeo. I don't even know what that means, he replied as he opened the front door. What the hell is a rodeo? Lita shrugged. It's an old saying, she said dismissively, and followed him down the hallway, her expression transforming from exasperated sarcasm into a brilliant smile. Mrs. Bacrotti! She exclaimed, going to give Watt's mom a hug. How are you? I've been meaning to bring this over for Zara. I found it when I was cleaning out some of my old things. To Watt's astonishment, Lita reached into her purse and produced a tiny horse figurine. She pushed a button and the horse began running across the floor. Damn, she was good, he thought with grudging respect. When they were finally in Watt's bedroom with the door shut, Watt stared at Lita. She'd already claimed a seat on his bed, crossing her legs beneath her with proprietary ease.
How did you know that Zara's in a horse phase? He asked suspiciously.
Your mom told me the last time I was here. Lita rolled her eyes. Seriously, Watt, that quant of yours has made you unforgivably lazy. Do you ever listen to people?
I listen to you, he replied, caught off guard by the insight.
I don't think so, Lita said lightly. Is Nadia on? For a moment, Watt thought he was dreaming. It was still surreal hearing anyone talk about Nadia.
I'm always on, Nadia replied, projecting from the speakers.
She sounded slightly offended. Lita nodded as if unsurprised. Nadia, she said, with a respectful tone she never used with Watt. Would you please research someone for me? Her name is Calliope Brown. She's around our age.
Searching now, Nadia replied.
Watt felt increasingly annoyed.
You're making it too easy on her,
she asked nicely, unlike you.
Just what are we looking for exactly?
Watt sank into his desk chair and stretched his arms overhead, trying not to think of how close Lita was, the fact that she was so casually sitting there on his bedsheets.
I'm not sure, Lita admitted.
But something is off about this girl, I know it.
So we're basing this on a hunch of yours?
Laugh all you want, but my hunches are spot on. After all, I had a hunch that there was something off about you, and I was right, wasn't I? Watt had nothing to say to that. Lita leaned forward as Nadia's search results populated the monitor. There was a Calliope Brown registered in the tower on floor 473, an older woman with a narrow smile.
No, that's not her, Lita said, disappointed.
Watt frowned.
Nadia, can you widen the search to the United States?
They scrolled through dozens of faces, then expanded the search internationally, but Lita just shook her head impatiently at every image that appeared.
She's staying at the Nuage. Can we find her that way?
Lita impatiently yanked out her ponytail to redo it.
I'll show you the cams at high speed, pulling out the faces. Tell me which one she is,
Nadia offered, using snapshots of the video feed to create an instant database of all the guests. Watt could feel Nadia getting into the search a little, despite herself. There was nothing she loved more than a good puzzle. After a few minutes of scrolling, Lita leapt off the bed, pointing to a figure in the top right.
There, you see? That's her!
Nadia, can you grab her retinal scans?
Watt asked. Moments later, Nadia had pulled up the information. The girl's retinas were registered to Haroi Haniko, a woman from Kyoto who died 7 months ago.
Okay. She's got a stolen retina pattern, Lita said, clearly stunned. She must be a criminal, right?
Now even Watt was getting curious.
Nadia, what about facial reg? Full international scope.
She could change her eyeballs, he thought logically, but it was much harder to drastically change her face. The screen came up blank.
No matches.
Try again,
Lita asked, but Watt shook his head.
Lita, that search included every government, national, state, province, municipal, in the entire world. If this girl existed, we would have found her.
What are you saying, that I made her up? She's right there on camera, you can see for yourself!
Lita burst out, exasperated.
I'm saying this is really weird. If she'd ever lived anywhere, she would have gotten registered for an ID ring or a tax card or whatever.
Well, there's your answer, Lita declared. She's never actually lived anywhere, only visited. She never got an adult ID.
Watt wouldn't have thought of that, but it made sense.
Why would anyone live that way?
Because she's up to something, obviously.
Lita delivered the phrase with a dramatic flair, as if she were an actress performing in an old tragic play. She frowned.
But why hasn't anyone figured out that her retinas are wrong?
No one actually verifies retinal scans in public places, just cross-checks them with the criminal list. I'm guessing you haven't seen her in any private homes, he pointed out.
Just Avery's, but it was for a party, Lita said, and Watt nodded.
Whatever she's up to.
He said the phrase the way Lita had, which elicited a smile.
She's clearly an expert at it.
They both grew quiet at the notion. Then Lita looked up with a new idea.
What about schools? Could you run her facial reg on school networks, not government ones? Or are they hard to crack?
It was a good idea. Watt wished he'd thought of it first.
Nothing is too hard for Nadia,
he boasted, which wasn't totally true, but sounded badass.
Nadia?
He prompted, but she'd already found a hit. Claire Dawson, who attended St. Mary's boarding school in England for a single year.
Yes! That's her!
Lita cried out in excitement. Another match popped up.
Cicely Stone at an American school in Hong Kong. Eleanor Lefebvre in province. Sophia Gonzalez at a school in Brazil. And on until Nadia's screen was covered in at least 40 aliases, all clearly linked to images of the so-called Calliope.
Wow, Watt said at last.
This was way more intense than what he normally dealt with on Hacker House, which was usually just student grade wipes and cheating spouses, the occasional ID search.
This proves it. She's a criminal, Lita said triumphantly.
Her dark eyes were dancing with the thrill of the chase.
Or a sociopath, or a secret agent, or maybe her family is crazy. We can't jump to conclusions.
Lita moved closer to the screen and bent down. He found himself distracted by her presence.
Nadia, he added, clearing his throat. Can you find records of any incidents at these schools? Expulsions, misdemeanors, anything unusual in her files?
And cross-reference all her classmates at these schools? See which of them were her friends? Maybe we can find something through them, Lita added.
Without warning, she sat on Watt's lap, laced her fingers up in his hair, pulled his head down to hers. Her mouth on his was warm and insistent. Watt was the one to pull away first.
I thought you said that wasn't why you came here, he teased, though he wasn't complaining.
It wasn't the only reason, Lita corrected.
You don't want me to go up to your...
Shut up, Lita said impatiently, and kissed him again, her arms over his shoulders. It was easy to stand, to carry Lita to the bed. She was so light, and lay her gently down, never breaking the kiss. Then his hands were on her back, the curve of her hip, and her skin was so soft, and Watt didn't know anymore whether he liked her or detested her. Maybe he felt both at the same time, which would explain why all his nerve endings were going haywire, like his whole body might explode at any moment. He started to ask Nadia to turn off the lights, but the room was already dark, a deadbolt sliding firmly across the door. Lita blinked up into the darkness. She was wrapped around Watt's sleeping form, the two of them cocooned in the warmth beneath his blanket, tangled so closely that even their breath had subconsciously aligned. Their inhales and exhales occurring together like in that old medieval poem about the star-crossed lovers.
Clock,
Lita whispered as quietly as she could. The blinking numbers in the top left corner of her vision told her it was 1:11 a.m.,
Crap. She hadn't meant to stay so late.
Had only come over on a sudden impulse when she saw Calliope at anti-grav yoga with Risha and remembered her conversation with Avery. She'd hoped desperately to find something on Calliope, as if she could give it to Avery as a peace offering and undo all the wrong she'd inflicted on her friend. And, she admitted, she'd wanted an excuse to see Watt. She shifted over in the narrow bed, not especially surprised that she'd fallen asleep there. She felt so at ease with Watt, her sleep finally free of the nightmares that normally chased her down long, endless hallways and grasped at her with phantom fingers. Thank God she'd at least had the presence of mind to tell her parents she was studying late with friends. Hopefully they wouldn't notice her tiptoeing upstairs at this hour. Then again, they hadn't noticed her sneaking Watt into her room all week either. Lita propped herself on one elbow to glance down at Watt's sleeping form, tawny and lean and dangerous. He was like a flame, drawing her in, and she couldn't stop even though she knew it might hurt her. She let her gaze trace over his features in a way she never would while he was awake, studying his strong nose, his full, sensuous mouth, the shadowed lids over those glowing hazel eyes. His eyes were twitching a little, as if he was dreaming. What did that mind of his dream about? Maybe he dreamed of her. She reached her hands up into his thick, dark hair, playing with its curls, feeling the ridged smoothness of his skull beneath. So much intelligence in that whirling, humming, genius brain of his, she thought. so much that she didn't understand. Watt fascinated her and scared her a little, too, because he was so unlike anyone she'd ever met. Her fingers traced a bump under his right ear, and her breath caught. His skin was raised in a perfect circle, far too regular to be natural. It was firm to the touch, as though something had been surgically embedded there. She tried to lift his hair to get a glance at his scalp, but she couldn't see even a trace of a scar. A cold shiver of foreboding traveled up her spine, and her hand darted quickly back. "Surely not," Lita thought, in answer to the bizarre thought that had traveled up from some place deep within her. Surely Watt's computer wasn't embedded in his brain. It seemed impossible. Yet it explained so many things about him. The way he moved through the world more effortlessly than other people, without ever mumbling to his contacts. All those times he seemed to communicate with Nadia in complete silence. The fact that Lita had never been able to locate Nadia, no matter how diligently she'd searched through his room. It seemed impossible, yet if Lita had learned anything in her 17 years, it was that the impossible was very often true. Watt stirred, his eyes fluttering open. "What time is it?" "Shh, it's late. Go back to sleep." Her mind was still frantic, trying to sort out the implications of what she'd found. "Don't leave yet," Watt said drowsily, reaching up to run a hand down her bare arm. His touch sent tiny explosions along her skin. Lita wanted more than anything to lie back down, press herself into him, unlearn the truth that she'd inadvertently discovered. She wanted to ask Watt about the strange bump in his skull. How had he gotten Nadia in the first place? And did it hurt? Did he regret it, being part computer? Watt started to sit up. Lita cast her gaze wildly around the room so that he wouldn't catch her staring, and her eyes caught on something she hadn't noticed before, a virtual reality headset on his bedside table. It looked like a half-completed prototype. Even Lita could tell that huge chunks were missing. Only really hardcore gamers still wore headsets, since the rendering on them was still better than even the most powerful contacts. "Did you build this?" Lita asked, picking it up, hoping to distract him from her rapidly beating heart. Watt shrugged. "That's just a side project. I was trying to see if I could improve the motion tracking features, using Nadia's computing abilities." She pulled the headset on, but nothing happened. "It doesn't actually work yet," Watt pointed out, though he seemed amused by her efforts. Lita left the headset on for a moment. She liked having the safety of the lens between herself and the world, liked hiding her features from Watt's incisive gaze. She wondered what Nadia was thinking right now, hiding there in Watt's brain, watching her. Oh, God! Had Nadia been watching them through Watt's eyes this whole time? Something about it creeped Lita out, as if there had been a ghost in bed with them. She pulled the headset off and stood up to hunt for her clothes, which were scattered in the textured darkness. "I should go." "Okay," Watt said. He sounded disappointed, but maybe she was imagining it. Lita paused in the doorway to look back at him. He'd kicked off the sheets and lay back in bed like a sketched shadow. The soft light from the hallway picked out his unruly hair, his disarming smile. He suddenly looked very young and boyish, and not scary at all. Lita's heart slowed a little. She remembered that she was going to Dubai for the weekend. It would be her first night without Watt since before the rehab check-in. "Hey," she whispered. Watt looked up at her, expectant. "Do you want to come with me to Dubai for the Mirror's launch party?" Watt smiled. "Yeah, I'd like to come." Later, as she walked home from the lift stop, Lita looked around, startled at the familiar yet somehow alien streets. Her block seemed simpler, cleaner, the lights from the lamps falling in beautiful pools against the darkness. It was the same and yet utterly different from normal, and Lita realized that maybe she was what had changed. There was a great gulf between the Lita of yesterday and the Lita of today. She knew that Watt had a computer inside him. But so what? It wasn't any weirder than anything else that had happened lately. He was still Watt, she reasoned, and he was still going to Dubai with her. Coming for real. Not coerced or blackmailed, but because he actually wanted to be there as her date. For the first time in her life, Lita Cole had dirt on someone. Serious dirt, come to think of it. And had absolutely no intention of putting it to use. Rylan.
Please, Mrs. Lane, I really need to switch to the intro-level holography class, Rylan pleaded, standing at the registrar's desk yet again. It was Friday morning, and she was repeating the same plea she'd been making all week long to no avail, begging the registrar to switch her from Shane's holography class to the intro to holography section that Cord had mentioned. That class was taught by a woman named Elaine Blyson, who had white hair and bright red lipstick and seemed like a perfectly safe choice for a professor. So far, Mrs. Lane had been no help, but Rylan refused to give up. She couldn't bear the thought of walking into the classroom that afternoon and seeing Shane. She wanted to put the whole damn mess behind her and move on.
"I'll do anything," she said urgently, leaning her forearms onto the woman's desk. "I'll take double arts next year. I'll do another independent study. I just cannot stay enrolled in that class."
"Miss Myers, as I've reminded you all week, the course selection period has long since ended. It's too late for you to drop a class now. It was already too late when you were added to the class. You only got in at all because you were a mid-semester addition." Mrs. Lane sniffed and turned back to her tablet. "Frankly, I don't understand your desire to drop the class. You know it's our most popular elective. And after that fabulous independent study you just participated in, I'm a bit shocked.
Is there a problem here?"
Rylan was stunned to see Lita Cole in the doorway of Mrs. Lane's office. "Forgive me for interrupting," Lita went on, with a charming smile. "I was just on my way back from a student government meeting and had a question for Mrs. Lane." Rylan tried to make eye contact with her, baffled, but Lita was staring determinedly at the administrator.
"Miss Cole, maybe you can talk some sense into Miss Myers here," Mrs. Lane exclaimed. "She's trying to drop down to the intro-level holography class, and I've been telling her all week that it's simply impossible."
"Intro to holography? Really?" Lita glanced at Rylan with a questioning expression. Rylan stayed silent. She had no desire to piss off Lita. Lita seemed to read something in Rylan's demeanor and turned back to the older woman.
"But you know, Mrs. Lane, our class is incredibly oversubscribed. Perhaps it wouldn't be the worst thing if Rylan were to drop it."
"I forgot that you're in that class as well," Mrs. Lane exclaimed.
"So you understand how important it is to maintain the classroom balance."
"Mrs. Lane," Lita cut in smoothly, "Rylan is an incredible student, but she might benefit from the intro class. You should see the hollows she took at Hotel Burroughs last Thursday. The material is scintillating, but the lighting is far too bright. You can see every last dirty little detail in the shots." She slightly emphasized the last few sentences. Mrs. Lane colored, but said nothing.
"Of course, I am aware of the school policies," Lita went on, an eyebrow raised meaningfully. "But I'm not sure Rylan is yet. Perhaps it would help to have Dean Moreland explain them to her so she can understand the implications. I know he has just the right touch when it comes to sensitive matters like this."
Mrs. Lane's mouth was hanging open, utterly speechless. Rylan looked back and forth from Lita to the registrar in bewilderment. She wasn't sure whether or not to speak.
"Mrs. Lane," she finally began, but the woman cut her off.
"Yes, Miss Cole, I see your point," she said, nodding vigorously. Her expression was strangely pinched.
"Miss Myers,
I'm dropping you down to the base level course. It meets on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the Arts Pavilion. Thank you, Rylan stammered, but Lita was already dragging her out into the hallway, a satisfied smirk on her face. You're welcome, Lita declared and turned away.
Wait, what the hell just happened? How did you do that?
And why? Lita shrugged.
Mrs. Lane is having an affair with Dean Moreland, who, as you may know, is married. They meet at the Hotel Burroughs every Thursday.
Rylan hadn't heard anything about an affair.
Does everyone know about that? She asked, surprised.
No, just me, Lita answered mysteriously.
Oh.
Rylan stood there, overwhelmed by a curious sense of relief and resentment that she was now indebted to Lita Cole.
Well, thank you. Don't worry. You can owe me one. Lita! She called out, and the other girl turned back expectantly.
Rylan gulped.
Why did you just help me? I thought you hated me.
A brief flash of something, guilt or indecision or maybe even regret, crossed Lita's face.
Maybe I'm just sick of everyone thinking I'm a cold-hearted bitch, she said matter-of-factly.
Rylan couldn't think of an appropriate answer to that.
Can I ask, though? Lita went on.
Why did you want to drop the class?
Rylan briefly considered lying, but after what had just happened, she felt she owed Lita the real story.
During my independent study last week, Shane kissed me. I don't want to see him again, for obvious reasons.
Shane came on to you? Lita repeated.
Rylan nodded, and Lita rolled her eyes.
God, what an ass. I'm sorry. And here I thought he might actually be one of the decent ones.
Do those exist? Rylan said dryly, and to her surprise, Lita laughed.
You make a good point.
Hey, she said, as if a sudden idea was striking her. Are you going to the Dubai launch party this weekend? Rylan had heard the other kids talking about it all week, scheduling their private hydrojets and discussing the gowns they'd ordered, since the theme was a black and white ball. She told herself it was all ridiculous. Partying in New York was no longer good enough for these highliers. They had to fly halfway around the world to get drunk with the same people as always. Still, some absurd part of her wanted to go, if only to see it all.
I wasn't planning on it, she said now to Lita.
You should, Lita urged. It'll help take your mind off things like self-centered holography professors.
I wasn't invited, Rylan protested.
Lita waved a hand in careless dismissal.
It's Avery's dad's party. Of course you can come. That's not an issue.
Rylan blinked at her, stunned. Was this some kind of trap? And since when were Lita and Avery best friends again? Rylan wasn't exactly clued in to the social scene, but even she knew that those two hadn't been speaking since the night on the roof.
Thanks. I'll think about it, she said cautiously, suspicious of Lita's motives.
Well, I have to go. One of us is about to be late to our favorite arts class, Lita said with a smile, as if they now shared a private joke. She paused, seeming to think of one last thing.
By the way, the Andertons are big investors in Fuller Enterprises, which means that Cord is probably going.
If that changes your mind at all.
How did you...
What secret weapon did Lita have that she seemed to know everything about everyone? The bell rang, leaving Rylan standing there alone and bewildered, wondering what exactly had just happened. When school was out that afternoon, Rylan walked directly to the edge of the tech net and pinged Lux. No answer. Well, Rylan decided, she would just go and see her, and make a quick pit stop first. When she knocked at the Briars' door, Lux answered, wearing an old sweatshirt and shorts with a hole in them. Her hair was jet black today,
chopped off in terrible, uneven bangs.
"Wow,"
Lux said, her voice flat. Her eyes traveled from Rylan's uniform to her preppy ballet flats and the pink and white striped shopping bag in her hands.
"You look like a moron."
"And you look like a disaster," Rylan replied.
When Lux didn't say anything, didn't open the door farther, Rylan faltered.
"Can we talk? Is now not a good time?"
"I don't know, Rylan. I tried to talk to you all week, and you were completely MIA. I called you several times, but you never tried me back, not even once."
Animosity and pain flashed in Lux's eyes.
Rylan crumpled with shame. She remembered receiving the ping when she'd been with Cord on Monday, and a few others on Tuesday, too, but she'd completely forgotten to try Lux back.
"I'm so sorry," she apologized. "What's going on?"
"For starters, Reed dumped me."
"Oh, Lux."
Rylan stepped forward to give her friend a hug. The other girl was stiff for a moment, but allowed it.
"It's his loss, you know," Rylan murmured.
"Thanks. But that wasn't why I pinged you."
"What was it?"
Lux stepped back to look at her, and now the accusation was clear in her expression. "Hyrule's trial was the other day. I pinged to see if you were planning on going." She shrugged casually, but Rylan could see that she was bothered, for Hyrule's sake as much as her own. "I ended up going with Indigo and Andre." Rylan had totally forgotten that the trial was this week. She hadn't exactly been counting down the days on her calendar, but she still felt guilty for not at least thinking about it.
"What happened?"
"You don't even know? You dated him for 3 years, and you couldn't be bothered to look up whether he went to prison?"
"I was in L.A.,"
Rylan started to say, but Lux was talking over her.
"Not that you give a shit, but he got off."
Rylan felt a pang of relief at the news. Even though she still resented Hyrule for everything he'd put her through, she'd never hoped that his life would end at age 18. She realized suddenly how Lux had seen her recently. Absent, careless, too involved in her new highlighter school to pay attention to her friends. It wasn't a very flattering picture. But Lux didn't know the whole story, and that was Rylan's fault for not telling her. She exhaled slowly.
"Would you please come talk with me?"
Lux opened her mouth, and Rylan saw at once that she was going to say no. There was something cold and distant about her, as if she weren't actually here, like an insubstantial character in a hollow. She reached for Lux's hand. It was reassuringly solid. Recognition flickered in Lux's eyes, and she nodded.
"Fine."
Rylan kept holding tight to her friend's hand, the way they used to when they were kids. She led her down the street and around the corner to a tiny view box that lay tucked away between two of the apartments. View boxes were like tiny, half-forgotten parks, little slices of real estate with metallic benches and imitation window view screens, which only existed in spots where the tower's architects hadn't known what else to do with the square footage. This particular one had its view screen set to depict a dramatic sunrise over the New York skyline, though of course they were much closer to the center of the tower. Real windows with real views were far away. Technically, view boxes were public spaces, though they were too small to be of much use to anyone. Most of the time they were just spots for teenagers to go smoke up or stick their hands up each other's shirts. Rylan and Lux sat on the empty bench, staring at the funny, fake-looking sunrise in bright technicolor.
"Oh, I almost forgot this,"
Rylan said, passing over the shopping bag she'd been holding. Lux broke out in a reluctant smile when she saw the contents.
"You got every flavor?"
Inside was a dazzling array of popper chips. Extra cheddar, salted caramel, cilantro lime, even spicy plantain. She and Lux used to always walk past the gourmet snack store and wonder what it would be like to try them, but they'd never been able to afford even a single bag.
"All 12. A well-balanced dinner, right?"
Rylan said, and sighed.
I'm sorry I've been a terrible friend lately.
I've just missed you, Lux said, with less resentment than before. She opened the bag of salted caramel chips. I feel like I've been losing you ever since you started working for that Highlighter kid.
Because Rylan had been hooking up with him and hadn't told anyone, she thought guiltily.
There's something I kept from you about Cord,
Rylan admitted, her heart hammering.
I didn't want you to judge me. It's not exactly my proudest moment.
Lux silently passed the enormous bag of chips, and Rylan took a handful of the extra cheddar. The chips crumbled deliciously on her tongue. She felt suddenly very far away from the shifting hollows and Mars Aqua and gourmet fruits of the upper floor cafeteria. This was so much more real. She started at the beginning, telling Lux how she fell for Cord while she was working for him, how she tried to break up with Hyrule, but he got arrested, then forced her to sell his drugs so that he could get out on bail. How she'd been with Cord while Hyrule was still technically her boyfriend, even though she wished he wasn't. How Cord's older brother had found out and forced her to break up with Cord, to tell him that she'd been using him the whole time just for the money. By the time Rylan had finished, they'd worked their way through almost every bag of chips.
Sorry, I didn't mean to keep you here so long, Rylan said.
I had no idea, Rye.
Lux leaned forward, her uneven bangs sweeping across her brow. The light from the view screen gleamed in her eyes, making her pupils seem impossibly dark.
I mean, especially about Hyrule and V. They're in way deeper than I realized. And the way they treated you was not okay.
She shook her head angrily and brushed her hands on her sweatpants, leaving little half-moons of pink-orange-blue powder on them.
Show me a picture of this Anderton kid, she commanded, changing tack.
Rylan pulled up the link to Cord's profile on the feeds and passed her tablet to Lux, who gave a sharp intake of breath.
Damn, Rye! He's hot! Is he hiring another maid? Maybe I'll apply, she declared, and Rylan gave her a playful shove.
Lux giggled, the air between them clear now. Rylan's whole body felt worlds lighter, as if she were one of those rain balloons they tethered to the earth, then cut loose.
So what's the update? Now that you're a Highlighter, hasn't he realized he wants you back?
I am not a Highlighter, Rylan protested, and Lux laughed.
That's true. No self-respecting Highlighter would be caught dead in the dirty makeout view box eating a week's worth of popper chips, she agreed.
But she wasn't done asking about Cord.
Seriously, though, Rye, you'll never learn the truth if you don't ask. Why haven't you?
Lux had a point, Rylan realized. She needed to stop guessing at Cord's feelings and just act. She thought of what Lita had said this afternoon about the party, and gave a reluctant smile.
You're right, she admitted, and got out her tablet, pronouncing a phrase she never thought she would say. Ping to Lita Cole.
What? Take notes, and be careful. We're so proud of you, said Watt's dad, Rashid, giving Watt a rough slap on the back.
Ping us if there's anything you need.
Watt's mom, Shirin, tightened the scarf she'd insisted he wear, a silly gesture since the tower was temperature-controlled, but Watt knew she was just trying to keep from crying. Then she gave up and pulled Watt into a hug, her voice breaking.
We love you so much.
Watt tried to ignore the guilt that bubbled up at this elaborate farewell. His parents thought he was heading to a college weekend at the University of Albany. He'd considered telling them he was at Derek's house, the excuse he'd used when he went to Lita's rehab check-in, but felt like he'd barely gotten away with it last time and didn't want to tempt fate. The Bakratis had been overjoyed at his news. They were so worried about his obsession with MIT. They feared he might not get in, that he would be devastated, and worse, have no backup schools. And since Albany was a state school, he would pay in-state tuition. They were too excited to even question his announcement or ask for any kind of proof.
Watt felt awful, but what choice did he really have? They certainly wouldn't be thrilled at the idea of his jetting off to Dubai with a highlighter girl. Especially since he'd already told them that Lita was a classmate, and would have to explain why he'd lied about that. Honestly, if he didn't have Nadia, Watt wasn't sure how he would keep track of all the secrets and half-truths and lies anymore. Zara and Amir came barreling down the hall, all squeals and high-pitched laughter, ponytails and shirt-tails flying. Watt leaned down to hug them both. Then, with a final murmured farewell, he was out the door, pulling his dad's low-tech suitcase, the same one he'd had to borrow for the rehab weekend, behind him. He rounded the corner onto the main avenue, only to nearly collide with Cynthia, who'd been turning onto Watt's street, her enormous school tote over one arm. Watt remembered with a sudden, sinking feeling that he'd had plans to study with Cynthia and Derek today.
Sin, I completely forgot.
Nadia, why didn't you remind me? The whole point of having a quantum computer in your brain was to be one step ahead of other people, not behind.
I'm sorry, Nadia said. But she didn't seem very sorry.
Watt couldn't help but wonder if she was purposefully interfering. She hadn't been enthusiastic about this Dubai trip, though Watt wasn't sure why. He gave Cynthia his best, most charming smile, the one that had gotten him out of detentions and homework assignments and his mom's anger. But it had never really worked on Sin.
I'm actually leaving town, he told her, forging ahead. I'm so sorry I forgot to tell you.
Leaving town? Cynthia repeated, a sarcastic emphasis on the phrase, and Watt winced at his choice of words. He and Cynthia weren't the type of people to be casually leaving town, and they both knew it.
Where are you going? She asked slowly.
Unlike his parents, Cynthia wasn't someone Watt dared lie to.
Dubai, he admitted.
With Lita. It wasn't a question. He nodded. A crowd of younger kids streamed past, loud and rowdy. Cynthia grabbed Watt by the shoulders and pulled him aside, to a little retail corner that was half McBurger King and half a small pharmacy. Watt could hear the fast food takeout bot asking one of the customers whether he wanted fries with that.
What the hell, Watt?
Cynthia snapped. Anger crackled over her skin like lightning, breaking through her normally cool demeanor. Her eyes were wide, her cheeks flushed. Watt was startled to realize, for the first time in his life, that Cynthia was quite pretty. Why hadn't he ever seen it before?
Look, it's a long story, he began, but Cynthia cut him off.
You've been acting strange for weeks. You let her drag you away from school yesterday, and now this? What's going on between you two?
I told you she's got something on me,
Watt said impatiently. But he knew that it had become more than that. He thought of Lita in his bed earlier that morning, propped up on one elbow, looking down at him, her hair long and loose around her shoulders.
Whatever's going on between us, it's just physical, he told himself firmly.
He still wanted what he'd always wanted, to make her trust him enough to confess the truth to him about what had happened on the roof, so he could get out from under her thumb once and for all. And now, he was actually getting close. Soon enough, it would all be over, and he wouldn't have to spend any more time with Lita. Could send her to jail if he wanted. For some reason, he thought of the way she'd sounded this morning, the hopeful twang in her voice when she'd asked him to Dubai. He shook the memory away, unbidden.
What does she have on you? It can't be this bad, Cynthia demanded.
It's complicated.
Whatever it is, I'll help. Come on, we're two of the smartest people I know. Don't you think that together we could beat Lita Cole?
Cynthia, it's not that. It's just, I don't want to get you involved.
Cynthia let out a sigh. Little holographic Happy Meal ads kept popping up behind her head, making Watt strangely want to laugh.
Don't you see that I'm already involved, whether you like it or not? What? I can't help you if you won't let me, she exclaimed. And I'm sick of this. I never get to see you anymore. You're with Lita all the time.
I told you it's complicated, Watt said again, feeling like a broken record.
Cynthia took a small step forward, and Watt knew, suddenly, that they had come to a crossroads in their friendship.
You like her, don't you?
Cynthia asked.
No,
he said quickly.
If you don't like her, then don't go to Dubai.
Cynthia's whole body was taut, as if she were a drawn bowstring.
Stay away from her. Stay with me.
The last sentence was uttered almost under her breath, but there was no mistaking its meaning. On some level, Watt had known this was coming for a while now. What he hadn't known was what he would say. He stood there, looking at his friend, a brilliant, fascinating, remarkable girl who lived in his world and knew where he came from, the type of girl his parents would love for him to date. And he still didn't know.
Cynthia,
he faltered. Maybe because she was sick of waiting, or maybe because she didn't want to hear what he had to say next, she rose up on tiptoe to kiss him. Watt was surprised into kissing her back. He was surprised by this new version of Cynthia, who held him tighter and kissed him more fiercely than he'd expected.
So?
She asked when she finally stepped away, looking vulnerable and afraid and familiar and like a stranger. Watt shook his head. There were a million things he wanted to say, but he didn't know which of them was right. He felt that he didn't know anything anymore.
I'm sorry. I have to go.
You don't have to do anything, she told him. If you leave now, you're choosing her.
That's not fair. I don't have a choice,
he snapped, and turned away like a coward before he had to see the hurt in Cynthia's eyes. But he couldn't help wondering if she was right. Calliope. Calliope leaned forward on the vanity, which was littered with gleaming silver beauty wands and spray powders and a fresh manicolor mitt, all of it arrayed carefully before her, like weapons polished and laid out for battle. Her own lethal tools, which had always made her so dangerously beautiful.
You ready?
Her mom called out from the other room of their suite. Calliope had been unsurprised that her mom had decided to come to the Mirror's launch party after all. Like her daughter, she had an incurable weakness for anything bright and glittering and extravagant, and tonight promised to be all those things. She and Calliope had been acting chipper and normal all week. But Calliope sensed that something was unresolved beneath the surface. Things had been weird between them ever since their fight. Still, here they were, in a suite that Nadav had booked for them at the Fana, the gorgeous luxury hotel in the dark half of the Mirrors. The Fuller's rooms were in the other tower, but Calliope had insisted on staying here. There was something seductive, almost forbidden, about saying one was on the dark side. She glanced around at the walls, which were lined entirely with mirrored screens. Calliope could have switched them to opaque, of course, but she left them on, enjoying the sight of her reflected self swishing pleasantly about the room.
I'm ready. Atlas should be here any minute now,
Calliope replied. He would need to head down early as the host. The entire day had been one long tribute to excess and indulgence. Calliope had ridden over with the Fullers on their private jet, which wasn't exactly private, given that dozens of other people had been invited to catch a ride on it, all of them walking around the plane and chatting and clutching glasses of champagne as if the flight itself was just one big cocktail party, a logical prelude to the night to come. Maybe that had been the intent all along. Elise leaned in the doorway, showing off her delicate white dress, which made her look intentionally bridal.
What do you think?
Amazing. What about me?
Calliope turned back and forth in a model-esque pose. Her long hair was gathered into a low bun, emphasizing the glamorous length of her neck, and her sparkling black gown clung to her with an almost shocking closeness. She relished the way the silk file felt against her bare skin, like a seductive whisper in her ear, assuring her that she was young and beautiful and rare. Elise came forward and took her daughter's hands.
"You know that you look stunning. Have an incredible time tonight, darling. You deserve it."
Her voice rang with an unusual sentimentality, and she was smiling at Calliope in an odd way, as if she was trying to make up her mind about something.
"You like this boy, don't you? Not just to con, but for real?"
Calliope was caught off guard.
"I like him fine," she answered, fighting the twist of guilt she felt at the thought of stealing from Atlas tonight.
"He was a good person, though admittedly a little tortured and confusing."
"Don't worry. I'm not about to go elope with him anytime soon," she added jokingly.
Elise didn't laugh.
"And you like New York?"
Calliope turned toward the mirror, pretending to retouch her lips so she wouldn't have to look directly into her mom's eyes. It was easier to lie to people when you didn't have to see them face to face.
"New York has been fun, but it's time we moved on. I'm glad we're going out with a bang,"
Calliope said firmly, ignoring the way her chest constricted at the thought of leaving. Her mom met her eyes in the mirror, and Calliope smiled at her reflection. A knock sounded at the front door.
"That's probably Atlas," Calliope said.
"Have fun. Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
In other words, go crazy,"
Calliope called out, and pulled the door open. Atlas stood there in a simple black tux, looking more elegant and grown up than Calliope had ever seen him. He'd cut his hair, she realized, but left the slightest shadow of stubble along his jawline.
"You look amazing."
Atlas held out an arm to lead her down the hall.
"You clean up okay yourself," she told him.
He smiled, revealing that small dimple on one corner of his mouth.
"Thanks for coming with me tonight, Callie."
They turned down a hallway that dead-ended into a window, looking directly across at the light tower. The waters of the canal churned far below them.
"Do you mind if we stop by my parents first?"
he asked.
"They wanted us to meet there and all head to the party together."
"Of course."
Atlas's parents hadn't been on the plane earlier. They'd flown over a few days earlier to help set everything up. And Calliope had to admit that she was curious to finally meet the famous Fullers. She expected Atlas to turn toward an elevator, but instead he stepped forward to the window and traced a circle on it. The plexiglass immediately shifted, shooting a clear tunnel across the empty sky as easily as if it were a beam of light. Calliope was shocked into silence. She briefly wondered if the tunnel was a hologram, if this was some kind of virtual reality game to test her willingness of disbelief. But a glance at Atlas's proud face confirmed that it was, in fact, real.
"Ethereum," he explained.
Calliope had heard about the programmable material, which used linear induction and carbon mesh to quickly build and unbuild structures for the military, usually on-demand bridges needed for only a few minutes at a time.
"I see,"
she replied, in an almost careless tone, as if she'd seen instant construction bridges dozens of times and could hardly be called upon to seem impressed now.
"We got the first civilian license for it. Let me tell you, it wasn't easy."
Atlas sounded proud. Calliope realized with a start that he'd actually done this himself, had been the one to ping and persuade and make it happen.
"And here I was wondering what you did at your desk all day,"
she teased, though she felt uncharacteristically proud of him, too. She took a bold step forward, her stiletto landing emphatically on the bridge, and willed herself not to look down at the thin, flimsy layer of material separating her designer shoe from the vast distance below.
"You're not afraid of it,"
Atlas remarked approvingly. Calliope turned to glance back at him over one arched shoulder. Her expression was almost a dare.
"I'm not afraid of anything,"
As they emerged on the other side and the tunnel blinked back out of existence, Calliope felt a little shiver of adrenaline. There was something about crossing the sky in a temporary tunnel that felt like a good omen, like everything that happened tonight would go her way. They reached the Fuller's penthouse and the door swung open. Atlas's dad stood on the other side.
"You're Calliope, right? Pearson Fuller," he said with a charismatic smile and shook her hand.
"Nice to meet you." Calliope wondered what exactly Atlas had told them about her. If she was meeting his parents, did it count as a date? It probably depended on where she spent the night tonight. She followed Mr. Fuller into the living room, its gleaming touchscreens carefully hidden behind carved furniture and plush cushions. The crystal chandelier overhead bathed them in a soft halo of light. Everything was decorated in shades of white and cream, against which the touches of black, Atlas's and his father's tuxes, and, of course, Calliope's midnight black gown, stood out like stark exclamation points. A woman who must be Atlas's mom glided in from the bedroom, glittering in alabaster tulle covered with Swarovski crystals.
"Which earring should I wear?"
She posed the question to all of them, holding out her hands, in each of which lay a dark velvet box. One contained a set of pear-shaped colorless diamonds, the other a pair of perfectly matched pink diamonds. The jewels seemed to burn against the contrasting velvet, light kindling within them to flash in a thousand small sparkles. Calliope's breath caught, and she tried to take a few snaps without being conspicuous. What her mom wouldn't give to see these earrings! It was hardly Calliope's first time around excessive wealth, yet everything she'd seen over the last few years suddenly felt garish next to this. These people practically breathed money. Their every gesture was painted with it, glazed with it. She wondered what they would do to her if they ever found out why she and her mom were really here. Her grip on her purse tightened until her knuckles cracked. She knew the answer. They would destroy her with the same ruthless elegance that made up the rest of their lives. Mrs. Fuller glanced belatedly around the room, then set the boxes down as she registered Calliope's presence.
"Calliope, my dear! Elizabeth Fuller, how lovely to meet you."
"Thank you so much for having me," Calliope said. Mrs. Fuller just smiled and nodded.
"Where's Avery?"
she asked her husband and son. Mr. Fuller moved to the couch and leaned back, one ankle crossed over the other knee.
"Who knows?"
he mused, seeming unconcerned. Atlas stayed oddly silent.
"Well, then, which do you think that I should wear?" Mrs. Fuller went on, returning to the gleaming white side table where she'd placed the two velvet boxes with their priceless contents.
After a moment, Calliope realized that the question had been directed at her. Her mouth felt suddenly dry, her eyes flicking back and forth between the show-stopping gems, both sets of which probably belonged in a museum rather than on a wealthy socialite's earlobes.
"The clear ones," she decided finally. "The pink are a little heavy with your dress."
Mrs. Fuller turned her plain but expertly made-up face back and forth, studying her reflection in an insta-mirror that had materialized out of nowhere.
"You're right," she concurred.
"But someone should wear the pink ones. It would be a waste not to."
Calliope could never in her wildest imaginings have anticipated what happened next. To her complete and utter shock, Mrs. Fuller held out the earrings toward her.
"Do you want to try them, Calliope?"
she offered. Calliope opened her mouth, but no sound came out.
"Oh, I don't know,"
she finally stammered, though she could practically hear her mom's voice in her ears, hissing at her to stop stalling and take the damned earrings. She'd just been too surprised to react properly. Mrs. Fuller smiled.
"They would look striking against your hair. Stones this color have to be worn by us brunettes, you know."
She gave a little wink, as if she and Calliope were allies against an army of diamond-stealing blondes, and dropped the earrings onto Calliope's bare palm as easily as if they'd been a couple of chocolate candies. This couldn't be real.
People didn't act this way on their own, unbidden. Calliope thought of all the time she'd been given expensive things in her life.